Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. These three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way that pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. Please repeat. Devotion.
Devotion,
direct experience of the Supreme Lord,
and detachment from other things.
These three occur simultaneously. For one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
In the same way.
That pleasure, nourishment,
and relief from hunger,
come simultaneously and increasingly,
with each bite,
for a person engaged in eating. It's a very interesting analogy that's being used here by Sri Kaviya. And this whole section is quite interesting because we see that, you know, the discussion is that Narad Muni, he's visited the house of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is asking questions about devotion. So it's actually, he's asking, what is the thing I can do that will please Krishna the most? And then so Narayana discussed this, also related this exchange between Maharaj Nimi and the Nadi Yugendras. And it's interesting because Maharaj Nimi asked the Nadi Yugendras 9 questions. And each one of the Yugendras answered 1 question. So this section here, this is Kavi answering the first question. So it goes from about verse 43 to verse 33 to 43, so 10 verses. And very, very profound answers he's giving there. Does anyone remember what the question was? Huh? Yeah, basically, what's the highest goal of life? If you go back to, I think it's verse 30 and 31. Some quite lengthy purports here, but in verse 30 it says, I ask you kindly to tell me what is the supreme good. After all, even half a moment of association with pure devotees within this world of birth and death is a priceless treasure for any man. Previously talked about the difficulty of the human body. And then in verse 31, he says, please speak about how one engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. If you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics, when a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. So basically he's asking, what is the best thing I can do? You know, what am I supposed to do with the human form of life? And then in the next, you know, verse 32 is Narad Muni speaking, but from 33 to 43, we see that Kavya, one of the Nadi Yugendras, he gives his answer. And you can see from the quality of the answer that he's a very, very spiritually realized person. And he gets straight to the core of it. He's not sort of, you know, like, sort of skirting around the edges, you know, speaking nice, palatable words and stuff like that to try and make Maharaj Nimi feel good. And he's just, because Maharaj Nimi's asked him directly, what is the supreme good? What's the best thing I can do? And very directly he answers it. And we see that, you know, the very first thing he says, he responds directly to his answer. In verse 33, he says, I consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by falsely identifying himself with a temporary material body can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. And he also goes on to discuss a little bit more about fear in a few verses. I think I made a few notes here about it, but I found it a very interesting discussion. In verse 37, fear arises, because we see, actually, in this material world, it's ahara nidhivaya maitanamcha. It talks about the condition of the living entities in this world. And it says that this condition is ahara nidra vaya maitanamcha. This is similar to men and animals. That means ahara means eating, nidra means sleeping, vaya means hearing, and maitanam means mating or reproduction. This condition is similar to both men and animals. So we see this fearing condition is very prevalent in this material world, you know. And here, in this section, he's explaining why people are fearful. And there's so much fear in this world. We can see right now in the world because there's some economic crisis going on. And a lot of people are very, very fearful about what's going to happen to them. Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my house? What will I do? How will I pay the bills? How will I feed my children? So much fearing is there. What's the essence of the fear? This fear. What is the root cause of this fear?
Attachment.
Attachment. But what's the root cause of it? Where's it coming from? What's the root cause of it? That's not.
Identifying with the body?
Exactly. Because they're thinking that I am this body. Right? All these things that happen are happening in relation to the body. What does Krishna say in the Gita? I forgot the Sanskrit. It says the non-permanent appearance and disappearance and happiness. Yeah, maktas, thank you. Maktas, vasat, kondaya, siddhoshna, sukha, dukkadaya. Agamapino, nijastamasa, tikshasava. The non-permanent appearance and happiness and stress are just like the appearance and disappearance of the summer and winter seasons. They arise from sense perception. Yeah? Because we're seeing something in connection to the body, therefore we see it in a particular light. Because we think it's mine, or it's related to me, so we see it in a particular light. But as soon as we understand the factual existence of these things, as soon as we understand, which has been discussed in the previous verse, which is actually the verse I thought we were discussing today, as soon as we understand the factual existence of these things is simply the expansion of Krishna's energies, then we see things as they are. And as soon as we see things as they are, the fearing ceases. So everyone in this world is fearing. They're in a fearful condition of life. So much so that we see, like, you know, if this situation, you know, this economic crisis gets worse, people will be committing suicide and all sorts of stupid things. You know, because they're losing some money. Just some temporary phantasmagoria. It comes and goes so quickly. Everyone knows that. I mean, you know, you get $1,000 today, tomorrow it's gone. Doesn't last long. But they become so disturbed by these things. So in verse 37, Kavi, he answers, he says, fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. Because as we understand, Krishna explains in the Gita that the material world is by nature dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's full of misery, it's temporary. Everything in this material world is temporary. Therefore, it creates misery. It creates misery because we become attached to it. We become attached to trying to exploit the resources, as the Lord says in the Gita, the living entity is trying to exploit the resources of the material nature, trying to enjoy it, trying to get something from it, trying to be the Lord and Master. Therefore, this causes misery because we're trying to exploit something that's temporary. We become attached and it goes away. It's finished. I was actually visiting my wife's mother yesterday, and she was talking about some particular object she had. She's quite interesting because she's a very pious person. She's a very, I would say she's very rabbinical actually. She's a very clean person, probably one of the cleanest persons I've ever met. But she also has knowledge. And she was saying, she was talking about some object she had in the kitchen. And she had to replace it. She says, I love it very much, therefore it's broken. She's having this realization when she becomes attached to things, they go. So it's quite interesting. So we see that in this material. What happens is that we develop attachment for things, and then they go, they break, they're finished. Whatever happens, we lose them. And then the misery comes. So because of this identification, we're always fearing that I'll lose this thing. We're always fearing that something will happen. We're always fearing that, you know, I'll lose my money, I'll lose my wife, I'll lose my job, I'll lose my car, I'll lose my house. This bill will come. But these are concomitant realities of trying to exploit the resources of material nature. We cannot avoid this. So he's saying here, when the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. If one remembers their actual condition, then nothing in this material world causes fear. Nothing in this material world causes lamentation, because we understand the reality that I am not this body. Now this ahankara, this is the root cause of all suffering in this material world. Thinking that I am this body, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. This is the root cause of all our misery. If we're experiencing any misery in this world, we can understand it's because of ahankara, it's because of avidya, this ignorance of who I am. Of course, an advanced Vaishnava will experience suffering and distress in terms of trying to make other living entities Krishna conscious. It's described how the advanced Vaishnava is always in anxiety about how to bring Krishna consciousness to others, and when he sees other living entities suffering, the nature of a Vaishnava is part of dukkha dukkha. He sees someone else suffering, this causes him suffering. And there's many examples in Srila Prabhupada's life of how he would be so disturbed when he would see others suffering. We see even the great Vaishnavas, I think it was famous dancer in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes? I think it was Vakrasha Pandit. He said to Lord Chaitanya that he wanted to take the suffering of all the conditioned souls. Vasudev Das. He wanted to take upon himself the suffering of all the conditioned souls, just so that they would have this opportunity to practice devotional service, because he could see their impious activities were stopping them from approaching Krishna, from performing devotional service. So he was happy to take on this suffering. We see Haridas Thakur, he was happy to take on the suffering of other living entities. He was happy to do this. And Prabhupada, he also saw that, there's a nice story in Mayapur one time. And this story was kind of like what was the inception of the Food for Life program in one sense. When Prabhupada, he heard some noise. This is in the Lotus Building, outside the Lotus Building. He heard some noise and he went outside to see what it was, and he saw that there was dogs and children fighting for scraps in the rubbish heap, because the devotees would just throw all the plates and stuff out of the rubbish heap, and there's remnants on there. So dogs and children were fighting for the scraps, and Prabhupada became upset at that. He was disturbed by seeing the distressed condition of living entities, and then he made the well-known statement that within 10 miles of any of our temples no one should go hungry. And this instruction was the inspiration for the Food for Life program. So we see that Prabhupada was very disturbed. It's not that, because someone is very advanced and they understand the reality of the material nature and the spiritual nature, that they become callous to the condition, to the suffering condition of those who are affected by the material nature. No, they actually become very, very compassionate. This is the nature of advanced Vaishnava, because they understand how every living entity is connected to Krishna, how every living entity is a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when they see someone who's not understanding that, someone who's suffering because they're not understanding their actual identity, then they become very, very disturbed by that. So this is actually the condition of every soul in this world, is that in this ignorant state of thinking that they're the controller and enjoyer. And this causes so much suffering, this causes so much distress for them. So here in these verses, Kavi is explaining. And you read all the 10 verses together, you see it's a very, very nice progression. In the first verse, in 33, he answers the question directly. And then he goes through this progression of explaining all these important points. And also some quite deep instructions here. Just like in 38, I thought this was quite interesting. 38 and 36. He explains that because we see that all the living entities are different. Everyone has a different capacity. And he's saying here, in accordance with the particular nature one has acquired in conditional life. What's that verse in the Gita? According to the way one's association with modes of material nature, one takes on a particular type of, what is it? And thus it meets with various sada sadhyana jagmashu, Krishna explains in the Gita. So according to the way one associates with material nature, one takes on a particular type of conditioning. And we're all different, we're all unique and individual. So to expect that we're all going to serve Krishna in the same way is just unreasonable. There's no basis in understanding. It's just, how can that be? I am different from you, you are different from me, we're all different. And we have particular likes and dislikes, we have particular nature, and we have a particular influence of the modes of nature. So these modes of nature cause us to see things in a particular way. Just like even with a simple thing like eating. Like some person may eat one particular type of food and think it's very, very wonderful. And another person will eat exactly the same thing and think, I don't know how people can like this, Such a horrible taste. And there's so many things like that, different music. All these things are related to the senses, because we have particular influences of the modes of material nature. Therefore, whatever we're experiencing with the senses, just like, Some people may think, like Prabhu here sitting here with just a dhoti and chadar on, I'd be freezing cold if I was sitting like that. So it's just again, it's the influence of the senses, modes of nature affecting us in a particular way. So in the same way with devotional service, and this is one of the wonderful features of devotional service, is it's so variegated, and there's so many different ways we can serve Krishna. And Krishna accepts these things. There's that statement, Bhavagrahi Janardana, that, you know, Krishna actually accepts the bhava or the mood of the worship. He doesn't, you know, no, this is the rule, you have to follow this rule exactly like this, and everyone else has to follow this rule exactly like this, and unless it's within these very, very finite parameters, I won't accept it. And there's so many nice stories. There's even a story about a rat who was in a temple one time. And the lamp, you know, you see, we had these lamps just burning on the side of Radha Vallabha, so the lamp was getting very, very low. And the lamp was just about to go out, and the rat got onto the altar, ran past the lamp, and it caught his whisker. And then his whisker caught fire, and then the flame consumed his whole body. Right? And he died on the altar. But because of Krishna's nature, he was accepting the service that this rat was offering of illuminating the temple, of illuminating the deity.
Yeah.
So he actually got the human birth in his next life. And there's so many wonderful stories like that in the Shastra. There's so many stories like that. The Acharyas present different stories like that. So Krishna's nature is that he accepts whatever little service, as he says in the Gita, in this endeavor, there is no loss of diminution. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So it doesn't really matter, you know, what it is we're doing, what our situation is, whatever service we offer to Krishna, he accepts that. And, as he says, that even a little service, I accept that, and it protects, it says, Trayate Mahatobaya, it protects one from the most dangerous type of fear. So whatever endeavor we're making, you know, according to our nature, we want to surrender to Krishna. We want to do something, you know. Some people may like to do books distribution, some devotees may like to do deity worship, some devotees may like to do cooking, some devotees like to do cleaning. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is we want to do, we just do that for the pleasure of Krishna. And it's interesting what Kavi is saying here. He says, whatever one does with body, words, mind, senses, intelligence, or purified consciousness, one should offer the supreme thinking. This is for the pleasure of Narayana. So if we have Lord Narayana, if we have this approach that whatever it is I'm doing this for the pleasure of Krishna, I'm doing this for his satisfaction, then this is devotional service. As it's mentioned, Anya Abhilasya Shunyam Jnana Kavanandam Anukulya Krishna Shilam Bhakti Rutama. So Rupa Goswami, our Acharya, he's explaining that if one's just offering some service to Krishna, there's no desire there to get some material gain. We're not trying to, you know, just like maybe, you know, serving the deity, we're not trying to get some karma or jnana out of the service. We're just trying to satisfy Krishna, we're just trying to do it for his pleasure. Then this is bhakti rupama, this is devotional service, this is pure devotional service. It'll go away, I'm sure. This is the process, and this is how we please Krishna. It's just by offering whatever it is we can do. As he says, Krishna says in the Gita, Yaktaroshi, Yajnashi, Yajduhoshi Dasya, Yaktapashashi Kuntaya, Yaktarusha Manapana. Shuva Shuva Hare Vam Moksha Kam Vandana Samyasa Yoga Vimukto Mama Paisis. He says, whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you eat or give away, whatever austerities you perform, you do that, O Son of Kunti, as an offering for me. And in this way you become free from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and thus you will come to me. So the same thing, the same point that's being made here. It doesn't matter what it is you do. Do it for the pleasure of Krishna. The same thing is given in the third chapter of the second canto. It says, Akama Savakama Va Moksha Kama Udadadi Tibrena Bahir Yajeta Purusham Varam. This Yajeta means with force. Yeah? And so whether one is with full of material desires, without material desires, or desiring liberation, one must by all means, with force, with enthusiasm, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So whatever it is we do it for the satisfaction of Krishna. And in that way, it has wonderful effects. Even though we may be attached to enjoying this thing, it has wonderful effect because we do that saving for Krishna, and then in due course of time, we become detached from the result of trying to enjoy that. We become detached from the reaction. We become freed from the reactions that come along with that activity. Just like one may be attached to eating or dressing very opulently. Say, for instance, you're attached to dressing very opulently. This can lead us to becoming more and more attached to the body, the way the body looks. But if we offer that same attachment in the service of the deity, and we dress the deity very, very opulently, then it helps us to destroy this false bodily concept in life. So the serving Krishna is just all beneficial. It doesn't matter what you do. If you do it for the pleasure of Krishna, it is beneficial. It helps us to overcome the false bodily concept of life. And this is the point that's being made here in this verse, is devotion, direct perception of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. These three things occur simultaneously and increasingly simply for one who takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We don't need to make separate endeavor. Of course, you can make separate endeavor on these various aspects, but we don't need to. If one feels the need to cultivate some facet of devotional service more, that's okay, but you don't need to. You just simply take shelter of Krishna. You try to serve Krishna more and more. And the more we try to serve Krishna, then simultaneously and increasingly, and the point is made here, when we're eating, the more you eat, the more your experience of the taste is increasing, the more your hunger becomes satisfied, and the more your body becomes nourished, increasingly as you eat. So in the same way, as we're performing devotional service, then increasingly and simultaneously these things are happening. Our devotion to Krishna develops more and more. The more we perform devotional service to Krishna, the more our devotion develops. And the more we directly perceive Krishna. We start to see Krishna in every facet. And Kavi is making that point. These instructions of Kavi are very, very profound, very, very deep instructions. Where he's talking about in verse 38, he talks here about, and also in the previous verse, in verse 41, he's saying here, the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist. And in the previous verse, he says a very similar thing. I lost her put the previous one. A devotee should not see anything as being separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, ether, fire, air, the water, earth, the sun, the other luminaries, all living beings, the directions, trees, other planets, our plants, the rivers and oceans, whatever a devotee experiences, he should consider to be an expansion of Krishna. So ultimately we understand that everything is Krishna. So this is, the direct perception is increasing. Because as we become more knowledgeable, more advanced in devotional service, we start to see directly how everything is just an expansion of Krishna's energies, Krishna directly. And as this awareness develops more and more, what changes? What changes?
Our consciousness.
But what, we're talking about the elements of the material nature, the manifestation of the material nature. What changes when we understand more and more their nature? What changes in us? The propensity to try to enjoy these things separately from Krishna diminishes, it decreases, and we actually understand that these are Krishna's energy, this belongs to Krishna. And with that comes the understanding that we should use these things to serve Krishna. This is the ultimate. And it's just like Prabhupada would talk about a machine. You take a machine and the screw falls out of the machine. On its own, it has no function. What can you do with the screw? Especially sometimes, with certain types of machines, depending on what's happening in the machine, they made the screws specifically for that function of going in that hole and holding those parts together. Because by the way if you look at screws, they have different types of threads on them. And the threads, it depends on how strong it needs to be and all different types of things, whether it needs to be a self-locking screw and stuff like that. There's all different types of thread. So sometimes these screws are specifically made for that purpose and they won't go into any other hole. Sometimes on cars, you find on one side the nuts go up this way and the other side the nuts go up that way on the wheels. So they won't come undone on their own. Some cars, European cars, used to do that. I think the old Peugeots used to have the other, because the wheels go this way, so they do the nut up so that as the wheels go around, it actually makes the nut go up tighter, and so they won't come undone accidentally. So we see that sometimes these screws have a specific task and can't be used anywhere else. So if that screw falls out of the machine, it has no independent value. It cannot do anything else. And the function of that screw is only realized when it's actually in the machine. So in the same way with the jiva, separate from Krishna, it has no function, it has no purpose, no value at all. Even though we think so, we think, oh yes, I'm so important, I'm this, I'm that. We have all these big, big inflated perceptions of ourselves. But the reality is, if we are separate from Krishna, our existence is meaningless. And Prabhupada will sometimes say, all these things in the material world are big zeros, they're just zero. You say your Empire State, your skyscraper buildings, you call them. Your 747s, your rockets in space. He said they're all just big zeros because they have no connection to Krishna. And this point is made in the 12th canto. That it's made there we're thinking that these things are so important, we're thinking that I'm so advanced, we're thinking that I'm so this, so that, but actually Abhishuddha Buddhaya, because of impure intelligence, I don't actually understand how things are. But if we connect things with Krishna's Patanti Ado Yishwar Angraya, they fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they neglect the lotus feet of Krishna. So here, same thing is being discussed, is because we're neglecting Krishna, because the living entity is neglecting Krishna, therefore he's in this condition, like this difficult condition of life. But if we simply understand that I'm a part and parcel of Krishna, then everything I do becomes significant. Everything in this material world, all these creations, if they're connected to Krishna, become significant. They become useful, just like the screw in the machine, or just like the finger on our hand. If you separate the finger from the hand, what can you do with it? Well, that all you can do is make it into compost and fertilize the garden. It has no other function. And if it's separated from the hand long enough, it what do they call it when it sort of rots? There's a name for it, isn't there? Well, if you chop the finger off and it stays away from the hand for some time, what do they call that?
Decompose?
No, there's some medical term, I can't remember what it is.
Necrosis?
Huh? Necrosis? Is that it? Necrosis?
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets to the point where it can no longer be rejoined to the hand. Even if you rejoin it to the hand, it wouldn't function again. There's a period of time where you can rejoin it and it will function again, nerves and blood, all that sort of stuff. But as it goes longer and longer, it gets to the point where it becomes completely useless. So as long as the finger is connected to the body, it has a very good function. We can use it in the service of Krishna. But if it separates the body, then it's completely useless. So the same way for the jiva, as long as we're connected to Krishna, we have a very important, a vital function in the creation. And that vital function is to serve Krishna and to tell others about Krishna, to help others to come to the platform of serving Krishna. But if we remain separated from Krishna, then we're asat, useless. Very important points here. So this verse is very important to help us to understand that simply by practicing devotional service, simply by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, that means accepting Krishna as our life and soul. Krishna pran danahe. We accept Krishna as everything. Then this devotion, It develops. The direct perception. We see Krishna in everything. We see Krishna in deity. We see how everything is manifest from Krishna. We see that everything in this universe is simply there to be offered to Krishna. And we become detached from trying, not detached, but like this, like, oh, it's all Maya, like the Maya body. And actually, the purport here discusses that about how, actually, it was the previous purport, discussing about how, this understanding, it defeats the Maya body understanding, because the Maya body thing will know everything is just Maya, and I reject everything. And Prabhupada would sometimes give the analogy, it's just like, you know, a person goes into the bank and says, I renounce all this money. It's just a foolish thing to say. The bank tellers are going to think you're a bit nutty. It's just not your money anyhow. How can you renounce it? No, because actually we understand that everything belongs to Krishna. And this is the point that's being made here. We become detached. And it's interesting because this word virakti is used. Not renunciation. Virakti means detachment. It's not that I'm renouncing, but I'm detached. I'm not trying to enjoy it because I understand who the proprietor is. Renunciation means I give it up. But this virakti, this is discussed here in the purport, I'll read the purport in a minute. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he points out that it's important that this word virakti has been used because it indicates detachment, not renunciation that hasn't been used, because detachment means I'm understanding who it belongs to. I understand that this belongs to Krishna. Therefore, I'm not attached to trying to enjoy it for myself. Rather, I develop attachment or utsaha to use this in Krishna's service, to use it in its proper way. So, yeah, a very important verse, and as I mentioned, Srila Prabhupada does quote this quite extensively. I'll read the purport. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this analogy as follows. Bhakti, or devotion, may be compared to tushti, satisfaction, because they both take the form of pleasure. Parashanubhava, experience of the Supreme Lord, and pushti, nourishment, are analogous because both sustain one's life. Finally, virakti, detachment, and chudapaya, cessation of hunger, may be compared because both free one from further hankering so that one may experience shanti, or peace. Very nice explanation there. A person who is eating not only becomes uninterested in other activities, but increasingly becomes uninterested in the food itself. Don't we all experience that? We sit down, we eat, and it gets to the point of, oh, full up here. And someone can bring you the nicest things. They can bring you sweet rice and mango lassi and pizzas and all these things that you relish. Oh no, thanks, for I'm completely full. Doesn't matter how nice it is, you know. Especially, you know, like after Janmasthami on Prabhupada's appearance thing, where we have the feast is brought out from the previous day, and there's like, you know, all the preparations have been offered to Krishna. And there's like, you know, sometimes thousands of preparations, and even you just take a teaspoon of each preparation, which is what I normally do. You just take a teaspoon of each preparation. It gets to the point where it's, oh, if I take another mouthful, I'll burst. And it's just, you know, even though there's so many nice and wonderful, I mean, Krishna is offered so many fabulous things, and you just can't eat anymore. So it's the same. It's like this satisfaction. But it's interesting with the development of devotional service. And we never achieve that point of satiation. It just increases more and more and more and more. We just want to experience devotional service more and more. And actually, one's utsaha, or enthusiasm, increases. And this loya, this greed for devotion, just increases and increases and increases. So much so that we see greatly advanced Vaishnavas acting like crazy people. We see that Lord Chaitanya was acting like a madman. Not acting, actually, he was so absorbed in devotional service, so trying to experience this devotional service, he became like a crazy person. So you see, it's interesting analogy, a little bit different there. But, yeah. So a person who is eating not only becomes uninterested to other activities, but increasingly becomes uninterested in the food itself, according to his satisfaction. On the other hand, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, although one who is experiencing the blissful personality of Godhead Krishna becomes uninterested in anything other than Krishna, his attachment to Krishna increases at every moment. So you see, this detachment from other things is developing, But attachment to Krishna is increasing, 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 increasing more and more. To the point where actually one becomes mad. Therefore, just like we see the Sakis in Vrindavan, when Krishna left the Rasasthali, the arena of the Rasadas, they just became mad. They're running around, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? They became so mad. Therefore, it is to be understood that the transcendental beauty and qualities of the Supreme Lord are not material, since one never becomes satiated by relishing the bliss of the Supreme Lord. So a very nice analysis there. We see that in material life, one becomes satiated. You take something so much, you just cannot take any more. But in spiritual life, you never become satiated with trying to experience the bliss of Krishna consciousness. You just never become satiated. If you become satiated, then you can understand that this is not transcendental. Oh, I've chanted enough today. We see the great Vaishnavas, they never get to the point where they think, you know, oh, I've chanted enough. Oh, I've danced enough in kirtan. Vakreshwar Pandit, there's this famous story where he danced in his kirtan for 72 hours. That's not ordinary. Is there anyone here in the temple who's seen dance for 72 hours non-stop? The body just wouldn't allow us to do it. But he was actually experiencing something different. He was experiencing a transcendental relationship with Krishna. So much so that in his ecstasy he was dancing and dancing and dancing and didn't stop dancing for 72 hours. The word virakti is very significant in this verse. Virakti means detachment, whereas chag means renunciation. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the word renunciation can be used in a situation in which one considers giving up an enjoyable object. But by considering everything to be potential paraphernalia in the service of Lord Krishna, as described in the previous verse, one need not give any thought to renunciation, for one uses everything in the proper way in the service of the Lord. Yukta vairagyam uchyate. The very pleasant analogy of a good meal is given in this verse. A hungry man busily consuming a sumptuous plate of food is not interested in anything else happening around him. In fact, he considers any other topic or activity a disturbance to his concentration on the delicious meal. Isn't it like that? Then you've got a really nice plate of prasad in front of you, you just got the whole offering, you know, the maha or something. It's like something else comes on, you're just not interested. And it's like, sorry, but I'm busy right now. You know? The phone rings, sorry, I'm busy right now. You know? Similarly, as one advances in Krishna consciousness, one considers anything unrelated to the devotional service of Krishna an obnoxious disturbance. Isn't that nice? So, this helps us, these types of analysis helps us to understand how we're progressing in devotional service. As I mentioned the other day when I gave a class, it's not something that's just open to whim or interpretation. It's scientific. And we can understand our advancement in devotional service. It's just like, you know, we're sitting down chanting Hare Krishna and someone wants to come and tell us a juicy bit of gossip. How do we respond to that? Are we interested to hear what they're saying, or are we interested to hear the holy name? And we can see that in all our activities. When we're engaged in serving Krishna and some distraction comes along, some form of maya manifests before us, where does our interest go? Where does our attention go? But we can analyze and see, where am I at in devotional service by that? What's my attraction? Am I truly attracted to Krishna's name? Am I truly attracted to serving Krishna and devotees? Or are these other things also interesting to me? And this can help us to understand where we are in devotional service. Such concentrated love of Godhead has been described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam by the words Bhakti Yogeni Ajeta Purusham Param. One should not make an artificial show of renouncing the material world. Rather, one should systematically train the mind to see everything as an expansion of the opulence of the Supreme Person of Godhead. Just as a hungry materialistic man, upon seeing sumptuous food, immediately desires to put it in his mouth, an advanced devotee Krishna, upon seeing a material object, immediately becomes eager to use it for the pleasure of Krishna. Very clear. And Prabhupada, one time, he was talking about the different things, because like when a greedy man, when he sees some, you know, like in the previous purport, I think there's an analogy about when a greedy man, he goes to the forest and he sees the forest of trees, immediately he starts to think how, you know, if I should I buy this land and cut the trees down so I can sell the trees and make profit? And we see that, you know, greedy people all over the world are just using the resources of the material nature for their personal profit. But a devotee will see, how can I use this for Krishna? What flowers are growing here that I can offer to Krishna? Is there any fruit growing here that I can offer to Krishna? Maybe I can use the leaves to decorate Krishna's temple. And you look around, is there mango trees here? Very good, auspicious leaves. Look for, you know, different things that can be used for Krishna. And, you know, a lusty man will go to the same environment, as it mentions in the purport, previous purport. He's looking around to see, are there any women in this forest that I can enjoy? The Prabhupada explains that, you know, an advanced devotee sees a beautiful woman, and he'll see, how can I engage her in Krishna's service? Not interested in the form himself, but just looking to see how I can engage her in Krishna's service. So these are the symptoms of an advanced devotee. Without spontaneous hunger to engage everything in the service of Krishna, you'll notice that without spontaneous hunger, not just, oh, okay, I'll do it if I can. You've got this spontaneous hunger, where actually this lolyam. Rupa Goswami talks about this greed to serve Krishna, this greed to experience Krishna consciousness. You've got to have this, you know, this intense greed for the satisfaction of Krishna. And that's the way that one achieves, you know, the experience of Radha and Krishna. Without the spontaneous hunger to engage everything in the service of Krishna and to dive deeper and deeper into the ocean of love of Krishna, so-called realization of God or loose talk about so-called religious life is irrelevant to the actual experience of entering into the kingdom of God. Very nice point. And that's also in his Mangalacharana to the Bhakti Raja and Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion. Rupa Goswami talks about how the great devotees, they dive deep into the ocean of he actually compares them to sharks and other aquatics, because, and then in the explanation it's given, these sharks, they swim deeply in the ocean. They go very deep in the ocean. So they're actually not disturbed, because we see, you know, like sometimes, like when it's very windy, you look at the bay here, the surface is very disturbed. But the fish that are down deep in the water, they don't sense that disturbance at all. So the devotees are like that. They dive deep into the ocean of devotion. So they're not disturbed with all these, like, you know, as is mentioned here, these so-called realization of God, or loose talk about so-called religious life. They're not disturbed by these things because they're deeply immersed in the ocean of Krishna consciousness. So they're just relishing at every moment the topics and discussions and the experiences of love and Godhead. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the path of Bhakti Yoga is so joyful and practical that even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, in which one follows rules and regulations without an advanced understanding, one can perceive the ultimate result. As stated by Srila Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12.187, Iha yasya hare dasya kamana manasa gira nikalaj bhakti vasa so jiva mukta sa uchite. As soon as one surrenders to the Supreme Lord Krishna, prapadyamanasya, giving up all other activities, virakti anyatracha, one is immediately to be considered a liberated soul, jivan mukta. The Supreme Lord Krishna is so merciful that when a living entity understands that the personality of Krishna is the source of everything and surrenders to the Lord, Krishna personally takes charge of him and reveals to him within his heart that he is under the Lord's full protection. Thus, devotion, direct experience of the personality of Godhead, and detachment from other objects become manifest even in the beginning stage of Bhakti Yoga, since Bhakti Yoga begins at the point of liberation. Interesting point, huh? It begins at the point of liberation. It's not that we go through this whole process of devotional service then we become liberated. The fact that we're actually practicing devotional service, which is mentioned at the beginning of Bhagavatam, means we've already surpassed liberation. You know, like these personalities are all aspiring for liberation because they just want Brahman. They just like want to merge. You know? And actually, as stated by Prabodhananda Saraswati, when you go on the Purikram path in Vrindavan, his samadhi is just behind where Krishna was fighting with Kaliya, with that, you know, Kaliya or Margana. It's just near there, very nice samadhi there. Not many devotees know it's there. So he mentioned that you know, the devotees are not interested in these various types of liberation. And actually liberation stands at the door with folded hands asking the devotee, my dear devotee, how can I serve you? And there's, you know, many different types of liberation. So actually the devotees are not interested in that. They're just simply interested in the satisfaction of Krishna. So they've already surpassed these things. Other processes have as their final goal salvation and liberation. See, that's their goal. But that's our beginning. You know, the fact that we're surrendering to Krishna means we're taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We've already surpassed that. But according to Bhagavad Gita, 1866, Savadamam Pritya Jamami Kamsharam Braja Hang Tong Sabi Bhapa Vyo Mokshi Sam Lasu Chaha. If one who surrenders to Krishna, one is immediately liberated and thus begins his career as a transcendental devotee with complete confidence in the Lord's protection. That's the whole purport. So any comments or questions at all? Mahatmaji.
You were talking about the Mayavadi. So what is the essential difference between Mayavadi and impersonalist?
Same thing.
Same.
Yeah, Mayavadi, Buddhist, impersonalist, same thing. It's just like slightly different packaging. It's just like, you know, you go down to Coles and you buy the home brand or you buy, you know, another brand. What's the difference? Just a box. Same stuff inside, it's just a box. So, you know, Prabhupada said Buddhism is just a covered form of Mayavadi.
Mahaprabhu is saying that Mayavadi is vas, Mayavadi vas nire,
Hoysavanash. Yeah, most dangerous.
So impersonalist may be a bit better than Mayavadi?
No, same thing. Same thing. It's all the same. Ultimately same thing. Because why? Because they're denying Krishna.
Because you're just saying that you are God, I'm God, everybody is God.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Ultimately, they're denying Krishna. So it's very dangerous for a devotee. And as you say, Mayavadi Vasya Shunali Hoya Sarvanash. If one hears his Mayavadi Vasya, everything is destroyed. Hoya Sarvanash. Yeah? Everything destroyed. You know, our bhakti will become destroyed simply by hearing this philosophy. And so, better to avoid these things.
What is surrender? Somebody asked me in the Bhaktivinoda chapter, what is surrender?
That's described in verse 65, chapter 18. It mentions Manmanava, Manbhakta, Manjati, Manaskumamane, Sattva, Patitam, Priyasami. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage to me. Thus you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this because you're my very dear friend. Prabhupada says in the purport, the very first thing he says, this is the definition of surrender. And so it just means everything, you know, our whole life, our whole consciousness is simply absorbed in the service of Krishna. Always think of Krishna, always worship Krishna, you know, render service, etc., etc. Always, that's surrender. It means no room for thoughts of myself, nothing for myself, it's all for Krishna. That's surrender. Anything else? Okay. Kundarashmi Bhagavatam Ki Sri Bhakti 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 Ki Sri Bhak